You're listening to the ArenaFan.com podcast coming to you from the JW Marriott Hotel, the home of Virgin Mobile Arena Bowl 22 New Orleans.
We are back at Radio Row at Arena Bowl 22 in New Orleans. I am joined by league founder and inventor, Jim Foster. Hey, Jim, good to see you today.
Fran, always a pleasure. Seems like you've been around here quite a while now. I tell you, you're getting to be a fixture, as I said when I walked in.
Well, this has been the sixth Arena Bowl I've attended. How do you like so far the game being held at neutral site so far?
Well, I love New Orleans. I mean, this is one of my favorite cities. I'm biased, but this is just a phenomenal environment to do a football game in. Have you ever been to Sugar Bowl? It's the same way. I've been to a couple Super Bowls down here when I was with the NFL and staff as promotion manager. And it just breeds excitement. It's intense. People, you see fans wherever you go. It's such a close quarter. Some of it because of the French Quarter being across the street. But I think it's a wonderful environment. I was not the biggest fan of Vegas. I'm an old Iowa Hawkeye. You go play in a Rose Bowl and you don't see anybody till game time because they just get lost in the millions of people in a big metro area. But it makes New Orleans a unique place for a bowl game. I wish we could just do it here permanently. I understand the need to move it around like the NFL does, but I can see why the NFL comes here so regularly because it fits this environment.
So where exactly would you like to see a future Arena Bowls being held?
Well, one advantage we have, if you know the history of the Super Bowl, the only reason the Super Bowl happened was because they were afraid they were going to freeze a couple hundred fans to death somewhere sometime, and where their schedules had elongated. They still try to do that in the playoffs occasionally, I think, not intentionally. But we have the advantage of being able to go into northern markets, as we did when we moved the game around to the team with the best record. And I know Chicago is very interested in having a game. I think that would be fun because Chicago's a big city, but it kind of has a lot of hotels and a lot of nightlife in a pretty compacted area downtown, and that would really be neat. Philadelphia, which is playing in this game, Philadelphia could be a good site. There's a lot of great sites. I mean, Denver would be a good location. Phoenix, we've done games there as we've moved the league around, and there's certainly some other cities that would play well. I don't have any real favorites. I'd kind of like to see one in Chicago because it was 20 years ago this weekend, as I show you the 1988 championship game program, Arena Bowl 88 between the Chicago Bruisers and the Detroit Drive. Great football game. Tim Markham at the helm for Detroit and Perry Moss for Chicago that year. Ben Bennett at the controls for Chicago and Rich Ingold for Detroit. Great football game that went down to the last stages of that game. And that was a fun time in Chicago.
Well, do you think the AF2 went back to the team with the best record? Do you think the AFL should consider doing that? And is that a good move for the AF2?
Well, the reason I'm very involved with the AF2, the AF2 did that really only for financial reasons. We were not able to find the right promotional situation where you're going to get enough guarantee to go in and do it. The other reason, quite honestly, is I believe that I was never a proponent of the neutral site game when I was commissioner and even for some years afterwards because I'm a marketing person by background. And I don't believe in doing something that you run the risk of not looking good when you do it. And, there's not – the fan base for the AF2 is not that developed yet. I mean, in the local markets, it's pretty good. But when you start asking fans to go to a neutral site – and you've got maybe 3,000-4,000 fans going to your home games, on a regular basis, maybe 5,000. Depends on the team. Some of the teams are doing better than that. You're pushing the odds of not having very good turnouts at those independent sites. And we did go do a game in San Juan. We are 3 years ago. We're the first American pro sports league to go do that, go offshore. It was reasonably attended, but the bulk of it were obviously people from the island that were curious about seeing an American football game, especially one indoors. Had a nice arena, but it exposed the fact that you're very vulnerable to what happens. We also did two games in Shreveport, bookending that experience in Puerto Rico. And, the crowds just were not that great. But you have to look back to the fact that the Shreveport teams at that time weren't playing all that well. They were getting better the second time we were there. And that actually hurt us because had they made the championship game, they probably would have had a pretty good crowd because their fan base was building. But they hadn't got to that point yet, and they lost in an earlier playoff game. And people actually said, well, I'm not going now. Shreveport's not in it. Why should I go? Shreveport, Bossier City, technically the Battle Wings. And I think right now for the AF2, it's probably better to take it to the market with the best record that wins out. If it's in Spokane, you won't be able to get a ticket. And, you know, the first 2 years, my Quad City Steamwheeler team hosted, played on what was then TNN television nationally. You couldn't get a ticket to those games. They were both sold out. So I think in the early stages of the league, you've got to look at that very carefully. The AFL is at a point now, and I think it's a credit to David Baker and the league and some of the owners, particularly the New Orleans Saints ownership of the Voodoo here. They've built this into an event, and you can see it. I mean, I've done enough Super Bowls. I'm sure you guys have been to them. It's not the Super Bowl yet, but it is really risen to the point that it's a pretty significant sports event in its own right, and it's very exciting to me when I can go in the lobby of a hotel and see fans walking around with Chicago Rush shirts on or teams that are Orlando Predators. I've seen a Utah Blaze. I mean, they're coming for the game, you know, because they love arena football, and that takes some momentum and some critical mass to get to that point. And that's what this business is all about, is building critical mass in the marketplace and with the media to the point that people want to be a part of this.
Well, one thing I want to mention to you is that the Iowa Barnstorm is having a new arena at the Wells Fargo. Do you see them eventually moving back up to AFL?
Well, I put that deal together. We held the rights to that Iowa Pro Football, and I made a decision not to move back to Des Moines. I'm in the Quad Cities. We like where we're living, which is Davenport and Rock Island on the Mississippi. And, I did not take any flood water where I live, and I have a home on the river, but it wasn't real bad in our area. Some other parts of my home state of Iowa really got devastated, including my alma mater, Iowa, University of Iowa. But what we did do was I negotiated a grandfather clause that says if they do well enough, and they are right now, if they do well enough over a period of maybe 3 years, 4 years, it would be dependent upon the circumstances, they could petition to go back into the AFL. They'd have to buy an AFL franchise at that point at the going rate. They are averaging just around 10,000 a game this year. They had a great response coming back. I knew it would be. The Barnstormers is a very interesting story because we did very well in Des Moines until the league was unionized after the 99 season. And I don't begrudge the players a dime of that because they earned it, and it's been great for the players. Unfortunately, if you look back on that scenario, the small market teams, and we were by far the smallest, fell by the wayside. And we knew that would happen. Albany went out. Oklahoma City went out. We were the first one to go. We were only a market of 450,000 people playing in the league. The next smallest was Grand Rapids. And quite frankly, if it weren't for the fact that the DeVos family, which is a very, very substantial family in the community, and very proud of that football team, didn't own it, they probably wouldn't be there anymore. They've done a great job of keeping Grand Rapids in the AFL as the Green Bay Packers of the league. We didn't have the financial base to do it, and that's why we moved on. But the fans had a hard time with that at the time because they just didn't understand why that team was leaving when their fans were so passionate. We were drawing 10,000 a game in an 11,000 seat building, sometimes selling out, but the sponsorship base wasn't there. And I don't want to mention this for people listening. It's not just about the fans. It's about sponsorship. That's a big part of teams' revenue. In fact, in some cases, teams are making more money off of revenue or more revenue from sponsorship today than they are ticket sales. It's also getting harder and harder to sell season tickets because the summers have become more complicated, shorter, schools are year-round in some cases. When we started arena football, even 10 years ago in Des Moines, Iowa, you didn't have all the video games, internet, 4,000 TV channels to watch, whatever. I mean, there's so much stuff out there to compete for the entertainment dollar that season tickets for a lot of people are hard to justify, particularly in this economy, and they're saying, "Geez, I just can't afford to plop down $200, $300, $400, $500 for season tickets. I got kids going to camp. I got kids and traveling soccer teams. A lot of that stuff didn't exist 10, 15, 20 years ago, and as a result, you got to be real careful about what you do. But the Des Moines market was very, very supportive of the team. They weren't happy when it left. Didn't understand it completely, but they patiently have kind of waited to see what would happen. And now the Barnstormers have come back. John Gregory came back as the head coach. They had a chance to have a pretty good team, but they had some quarterbacking problems. They lost a good quarterback early. They had a rookie quarterback who broke all kinds of Division III records in the Iowa Conference. And he's going to be a great quarterback. Mark my word, John Gregory has said to me, this kid has a lot of the makings of another Kurt Warner, and he's actually bigger physically. But he came out of D3 football, and the game moved so fast for him, it just took him about two-thirds of a season to figure it out, and he's really coming into his own. They're going to miss the playoffs as of last night. But I think that the Iowa Barnstormers in particular will be a very successful team in Des Moines. And if they do, over a period of time, sustain that kind of an audience space of 9,000-10,000 a game, and if they can do good sponsorship sales, which is the big issue for them there, I think. The market's a decent market for sponsorship, but again, it's not a market of 1 million, 2, 3, 4 million people where you can generate hundreds and hundreds of thousands, maybe $1 million or more in sponsorship in 1 year. So that's going to be the issue for them, whether they move up. And of course, that's going to be the decision of their ownership group. They got a great group of guys put together. I helped put that together, get it started. And I really like what they're doing in the community. I like their ownership group. The fans have been fantastic. It's a really solid AF2 situation right now. But you're talking $1 million a year versus $5 million a year. So it's a big jump, and time will tell on that. And the fans will have a lot to do with that, and the sponsors in the area.
Well, are you pleased with the work that ESPN's been doing promoting the AFL? Are you happy with the increase in TV ratings?
That's everything to me in the bottom analysis. I mean, you got to remember, when I started Arena Football, had I not got the contract with ESPN, and I sing praises every time his name comes up, Bill Grimes, who was the president of the league, he took a gamble on Jim Foster, he took a gamble on Arena Football, and we delivered. I mean, we doubled the rating of the National Hockey League the first year. But we were a novelty. As I used to say at the time, we were the hula hoop of sports that year. People were like, what is this? Where did it come from? But it's sure fun. But the reality of it is that today, to be successful in this business, you've got to be on national television, you've got to have visibility, and you've got to have repetitions. I used this term earlier. It is all about critical mass. Critical mass. I say it over and over to people. And I'm doing a lot of consulting for the league, out working with teams, trying to help get going, things like that. Particularly, I have two teams, fix problems. And I keep telling them the same thing. You've got to get credibility with the fan base and with the media, you people, to be successful, because there's so many, as I just said, there's so many things going on today that if you hear about a sport or a league or a team and it sounds like fun, but you just don't hear that much about it, or you don't hear people talking about it, you don't have that mojo or that buzz going, you're not going to be successful long term. You might have 2,000-3,000 fans, depends on your market, 4,000 fans, 5, whatever, but you're not going to sustain it long term against cost of business, because you just don't have enough critical mass to cover the basis. And I see this with teams in various leagues. They've got a very devout fan base, but it's not big enough to sustain it. And that's why they go out of business and they move. And sometimes it's bad management. Sometimes it's bad ownership. Sometimes it's a bad market where there's just too many complications, or the bad arena leases, you name it. But the bottom line is, if you've got television and they're promoting you, and they're active in it, you've got a chance. And the greatest thing about the ESPN situation is, if you go back historically, as I said, we got ESPN in 1987. They put us on the air. We had good ratings, but we had very little presence on SportsCenter, other than occasional mention. And that continued every year we had ESPN during the first 17 years of this league. I mean, we did not. They put the games on the air, and they showed them, but that was it. And, you know, the fan says, God, I watched this football game, and it was really fun. I really liked it. But, boy, and I used to hear it all the time, we don't even see the scores. We don't see anything about great plays or interviewing a player or a coach. I mean, why not? Well, at that time, the management of ESPN didn't see us as being a priority to do that. It was something. It was programming. It filled a hole. But, you know, we bounced around between ESPN, ESPN2, different nights of the week, tape delay, live. And it's about credibility. And now, this deal is so different. It's the greatest thing, in my opinion, that's happened to this league since the first contract, which if we hadn't had, we would have never got off the ground. This contract, they've taken a 10% equity position in the league. They sit on our board. And my guy, John Skipper, is like the second coming of Bill Grimes, only greater, because John Skipper believes in Arena Football, and he understands for them to make it a viable long-term product, they've got to get behind it, not just show the games. And they're doing that. And they can always do more. But we're in the magazine. We're on ESPN Classic. Somebody called me the other night and said they showed the Iowa Barnstormer, Tampa Bay Arena Bowl 10-game again.
And they're going to have three Arena Bowl games this Sunday morning. So fans can watch Arena Football all day and then watch the Arena Bowl.
And that's exactly right. That's what has to happen. I mean, you know, they show us as a greatest play of the week a couple weeks ago. You know, I mean, in the top. I mean, anything like that adds up. And here's the other thing that flows out of that. The rest of the media sees that. Because let's face it, ESPN today is the epicenter of in my opinion, of the sports business in terms of broadcast and publicity, all that type of thing. If they're on top of it, other media outlets get on top of. They start to pay more attention. And look at the article in the today, USA Today. That's the best one we've had in the history of the Arena Bowl, in my opinion. I think it's a pretty good spread. I mean, it's getting better every. But when ESPN is constantly reminding people about arena football and talking about it, legitimizing it, which it is a legitimate sport, we know that in this room, it just spreads that message out. And it's so important. I am just so pleased with what they're doing. I can't understate that enough.
Well, speaking of Arena Bowl 22, Jim, who do you like in the game, Philadelphia or San Jose?
I like them both. Spoken like a former commissioner, huh? I like them both. I did the San Jose game. Commissioner Baker asked me if I'd go out and represent the league office, him and the league, because he had to go do the game in Philadelphia and was at that one. And I gladly did that. And it was a great ball game. It was personally a special game for me because Stevie Tan and Darren Arbette were both players for me in the very earliest days of the league. And they've you know, matriculated into being good head coaches, and I love seeing players, former players, work their way up into these organizations and have some success post-playing days. And I thought it was a pretty good football game. Grand Rapids kept hanging in there, but they just finally ran out of bullets. And I think I didn't get to see a lot of the Cleveland game, but I think it was a similar story. And I think what you really look at now is that I love parity. I love seeing upstarts and lower seeds knock off bigger teams. Although I'm probably a little partial to Chicago Rush just because that's my closest AFL team to where I live. And we were in Chicago when we started the league, and we actually ran the Bruisers the first couple years in some form or fashion. We had a lot of ties to them. But beyond that, and Mike Cohen, he's a super great guy and goes way back with me. But despite the fact he's a Minnesota Gopher, we'll forgive him for that. the reality of it is that in the end, a couple of the best teams emerged and are in this championship game. And I expect a very balanced ball game tomorrow. I think you're going to see a lot of back and forth. And I think the team that makes the least mistakes is probably going to win this ball game tomorrow. That would be my opinion.
Well, thanks, Jim. Enjoy the Arena Bowl this Sunday. And we look forward to you presenting the winner of the championship trophy, the fourth trophy.
Yeah, it's whenever you get up on that stage with Dave Baker, you got to make sure they got a lot of reinforcement underneath it. Because I think it was down in Orlando like about 5 years ago, that championship game. Dave and I were up standing on the stage, and it started wobbling. And David said, we might have to jump. He said, can you hold on to the trophy? Now, that didn't make the air, but I'm going, oh, my God, I'm going to go down in the Foster Cup. You know what I mean? So that's a little anecdote from a couple years ago. Now, I'm looking forward to it. I'm just excited. It's a sellout. Again, the atmosphere is just great. It's just really neat to walk around and see people having fun with this game that I invented, and it's also very satisfying to see so many people that have jobs out of this and working in the industry.
Like me.
Yeah, well, you're a good example, but I'm proud of you. You're doing good.
Yep. Thanks, Jim.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to ArenaFan.com podcasts. Stay tuned for more coverage from Radio Row at Virgin Mobile Arena Bowl 22 New Orleans.